Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of YA Book Chat. Thank you so much for being here and listening. I would like to say a special thank you and give a special shout out to my latest Patreon member, Sarah. Thank you, Sarah, for your support. And thank you also to the rest of my Patreons for your continued support and for helping me to keep this podcast going. Well, today I am bringing you a very special episode. I recently had the chance to sit down with one of my favorite authors. You will know her as the author of the standalone book Heartless, the Lunar Chronicles and graphic novels that go along with those, the Renegades trilogy, and her newest book, Instant Karma, a contemporary romance. So without any further ado, here is my interview with author Marissa Meyer. Hi, Marissa. Thank you so much for being here today. Welcome to YA Book Chat.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Why don't you, I'm sure all of my listeners know who you are, but why did you tell everybody a little bit about yourself and some of the books that you've written?
I would love to. Thank you. So let's see. I am the author of a number of fantasy and sci-fi series. I wrote The Lunar Chronicles, which are essentially fairy tales set in the far distant future with cyborgs and spaceships and that sort of thing. I am also the author of Heartless, which is a prequel to Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland, telling the origin story of the Queen of Hearts, and the Renegades trilogy, which is about what happens when a superhero and a supervillain fall in love. And my newest book is my very first contemporary romance. It is called Instant Karma. And this one is very, very different from my previous books, obviously not being fantasy, not being science fiction, but it tells the story of a girl named Prudence who she lives in this very cute coastal quiet town, and she has very high expectations for people, and when people don't meet her expectations, she has these fantasies of being able to punish them or the universe punishing them for these various things that they do that really irritate her. Well, one day she goes to karaoke with some friends and she sings the song Instant Karma by John Lennon, and something happens and she is magically gifted with the ability to cast instant karma on people. And so she goes about using this power, and it's a lot of vicarious joy for me as the writer. but there is one boy that she can't stand, her lab partner, Quint Erickson, and they don't get along. They don't see eye to eye on very many things. However, whenever Prudence tries to punish him for something, it backfires. And so the book takes place over the course of a summer when Prudence and Quint both find themselves volunteering at a sea animal rescue center, and Prudence becomes determined to figure out why he seems to be immune to her powers.
Very nice. And that is what we are going to be talking about today. We are going to be talking about Instant Karma. And just so everybody knows, there will not be any spoilers today. I promise. I do not want to ruin it for anybody who has not read it yet. But before we get to that, I did want to say, so Heartless was actually the very first book that I covered on my podcast, and Bethany from Prince Kai Fan Pod was my guest. She was my first guest.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's amazing. I love it.
Yeah.
I love Bethany. She is so great.
She is. I absolutely love her too. And I am very happy that we met, you know, initially, and we've developed a great relationship since then. So it's a lot of fun.
Very nice.
Well, what made you decide to go write a contemporary romance and kind of take a break from what you were writing previously?
Yeah, I mean, there were a number of factors. Part of it is that I was coming off of writing the Renegades trilogy, which I loved. I mean, of course, I love all of my books and I'm very proud of all of my books, but I was exhausted after finishing up those three books. They, you know, deal with a lot of politics and a lot of power struggles and world building and superpowers. And there were points in writing the third and final book, especially, where I felt like I'd just been writing one never-ending battle sequence, and my brain was just so exhausted. And I kind of came away from that book thinking, I want to write something quieter. I want to write something sweeter, in which nobody thinks that they're gonna die, in which no one is trying to take over the world. I was ready for something, you know, not as big, with the big high stakes that come with fantasy. And I also, as a reader, I love contemporary. I love romance. They are my, you know, my escape books when I need to get away from dystopian and fantasy and all of that. I just love, you know, escaping into a really wonderful love story. So those things, I don't know, they just kind of started to come together. And I had this idea that had really been brewing in my mind for years and years, maybe even decades, about how cool it would be to be able to cast instant karma on people, because we all know what it feels like. The universe is not always doing its job, and there are people that you wish would just get what was coming to them. And I just love that idea. And it started to grow into this story of Prudence and this, you know, Sea Animal Rescue Center, and it all came together. And I told my editor, this is the story I really think I want to write next. And I think my publisher had a little bit of head scratching about it. But nevertheless, they supported me and said, Marissa, you got to write what you got to write. And so I went for it.
I love that they were very supportive of you and kind of taking a leap of faith and trying something completely different.
Yes, me too. I don't know that's the case for every author, but I really feel like my publisher, they care about their authors and our creative, you know, well-being. So they gave me the go-ahead without much pushback.
That's good. That's good. Was it a lot different writing a contemporary romance? I mean, did you have to like put yourself kind of in a different frame of mind in order to write that versus something like Renegades?
Yeah, no, it was very different. I would say for me, writing Instant Karma was pure joy. And that's not always the case with the some of the books that have more darker sequences and more action sequences. You know, when you're tackling subjects that are deeper or scarier or bigger, you know, that can have an emotional toll. This book, just compared to my previous books, it was just lighter, just happier in general. And so I just loved every minute of writing it. Truly, it felt almost like writing fan fiction again, like going back to my roots where writing was just nothing but fun. And so it was exactly the book that I needed at that time, which was great. As far as differences, I mean, probably the world building or the lack of world building was probably the biggest difference. Again, I didn't have to come up with, what is the government system here? What is the magic system? How does it work? And so there was just a lot less, you know, of that foundation building that went into the story. On the other hand, I think probably one of the things that was more challenging in writing a contemporary, at least for me, is I found myself doubting things a lot more as far as, you know, building a plot that was going to carry the reader forward, where things would constantly be happening and you'd constantly be, you know, building the suspense and the tension and all of these things. In contemporary and in romance, that suspense and that tension tends to come more inward, you know, from the characters and what the characters want and what they're feeling. And I'm used to that tension coming from, again, bad guys and villains, and explosions and these sorts of things. So just trying to make sure that there was enough happening in the story that it was going to hold the reader's interest. That was probably my biggest challenge and the thing that I found myself questioning the most as I was writing.
That makes a lot of sense. I can tell you, as the reader, somebody who's read it, you did a good job. It worked.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that.
I could imagine, you know, thinking back to Heartless, and when the first time I read that, how emotional that book must have been to write, you know, is different, and how hard that, like for me, thinking about it, I would have like been sobbing as I was writing it, because even as a reader, it's like, okay, well, I kind of know the ending of this. Like, I know what choice she's going to make, kind of, but getting to that point and the way that she had to make the choice was just like gut wrenching, you know? And I was very like, I was crying when I read it. I mean, so I can imagine going from having to write that versus, like you said, like all the battle scenes and the really intense stuff. This was definitely be like a nice change of pace.
Yes, there, it really was a very much a breath of fresh air book. Absolutely. Which is not to say that now, you know, oh, that's it. I'm only going to do contemporaries from here on out because they just bring me so much joy. You know, creatively, I get a lot of satisfaction and fulfillment from all of the books that I've written. So mm-hmm. I think that there will be a lot of jumping around from genre to genre, kind of as, you know, as the inspiration carries us.
Yeah.
But to what you said, I definitely sobbed and sobbed and sobbed when I wrote Heartless. That is true. I cried for hours. It was a tough book.
I'm not surprised. It was a tough one to read. I can't imagine like writing it. Oh my gosh. It's crazy. So one of the things that I wanted to talk about was the element of music in this book. Mm-hmm. I totally loved it. I am a huge Beatles fan myself. I'm not sure if you know this or not, but there is actually a show on Netflix called Beat Bugs for children. Yeah. Beat Bugs? Oh my gosh. The funny thing is, like, I found out about it and I told my boys, I was like, oh, let's watch this. But I'll be like, I'll put it on because I want to watch it. Like, I'm like, I want to hear all the Beatles music.
I know. It's really great because it does. It gets for the kids. It's, you know, mm-hmm. cute stories. But then, yeah, the adults are like, oh, the nostalgia. And I love this song. And
yes.
I love the idea for a show.
It's great. Well, and the creator of the show said the reason that he created it was because he wanted to expose a brand new generation to the Beatles and their music, which is so fantastic. So I would imagine, based on this book, that you are a huge Beatles fan. Is that correct?
Huge, yes. I grew up with the Beatles. You know, they were probably the band that was played the most in my house. And there's a local radio station that ever since I was a kid, every Sunday morning, they would do a Breakfast with the Beatles.
Oh, fun.
2-hour event. And so, you know, as a teenager, I just have the fondest memories of my whole family sitting around and we'd be just hanging out in our living room and drinking our coffee and doing whatever we do with the Beatles playing. And yeah, so those are some of my greatest memories.
Was that part of then, not just the Beatles, but music in general being a really big part of your life, the part of the reason for bringing it in? I mean, because we've got like, obviously the Beatles and Prudence's entire family's names, but Ari and her love for the music and then the karaoke, all of that too.
Yeah, no, and that, a lot of it just kind of developed organically, as I was writing the story, I knew that I wanted the character's name to be Prudence. I'd loved that name for a long time. I knew she was going to be based on the song Dear Prudence by the Beatles. Mm-hmm. And so then that starts to lean into, okay, well, what sort of family and parents would name their child Prudence? You know, not necessarily the quote unquote coolest name. And then, well, of course, a Beatles obsessed family would name their child Prudence. And so then this grew into this idea of her parents owning a record store and that she met her best friend at the record store. Well, what kind of teenage girl would be hanging out at a record store? The sort of girl that wants to be a musician, you know, and a songwriter. And anyway, so a lot of it just grew kind of as I was developing the characters and as I was developing the world. But of course, it came from inside of me and my love of music. I'm not a musician, or at least I don't know. A couple of years ago, I started playing the ukulele, but I'm still not enough to feel like, you know, I can say that I'm a musician. It's kind of a silly side hobby more than anything. So talking about music, and I mean, clearly though, a lot of this is coming from inside of me too. Mm-hmm. And just my love of music and my own childhood, in which music was a huge part of my family and growing up. And we just always had music playing and my husband's a musician. And so on and on. I mean, a lot of it just kind of worked its way into the story in ways that kind of surprised me sometimes.
Yeah, that's really cool. I had a moment where I was reading and I felt a connection with Ari because she made a comment to Prudence about Elton John not writing his own songs. And she was amazed by that. And I, up until this year, did not know that myself. I had just always thought, I don't know why, but I always thought that Elton John wrote his own songs. Then this year I watched the movie that Taron Egerton was in as Elton John. And I went, oh my gosh, he has never written his songs. I did not know that.
I know. It was something that I hadn't known for long. I mean, I think I learned that tidbit not long before I started writing Instant Karma. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of like at the top of my head as I was working on this, this girl that wanted to be a songwriter. And that scene in which they're listening to Daniel by Elton John. Mm-hmm. I was one of those things that kind of came about very serendipitously. I was just driving around in my car while I was, working on this book and just dreaming about it and thinking about it. And the song Daniel by Elton John came on the radio, and I love that song, but I hadn't heard it in so long. I'd kind of forgotten mm-hmm. about it. And I actually started crying because I thought, oh, it's just such a beautiful song. And then I felt ridiculous because it's like, who is Daniel? Why am I so emotional about this? And in that moment, I was like, wait, this is so something that Ari would do. Like, I need to work this into the book somehow. One of those things that just kind of came up.
You know what though? I love that. I love when I hear authors who have these like personal connections and things that get woven into the story. And it's not silly to cry. I am a theater teacher. I was an actor for a while. I've done, directing. I go and see a musical or a play and I will cry like all the time. Like it's just because it's my passion and it's what I love. And so, and in some way it just, something just reaches out and touches me and it makes me cry. And so I loved that scene. That was one of my favorite scenes for that reason. Like, and how Ari just really connects to her music and how much she loves it. Cause that's what I feel with theater. It was great. I love
that.
That's
so great. And I think it's healthy too. And some things really make me cry and I'm not really sure why. And then other things, like people will be like, oh, this movie's such a tearjerker and it, doesn't affect me at all. Mm-hmm. So it's funny, the things you're never really sure what exactly is going to speak to you on that emotional level. But I think if there's nothing that speaks to you on that emotional level, like that means there's a disconnect somewhere.
Yeah.
It's okay to be vulnerable. And I think we can lose sight of that sometimes.
I agree. So one thing I wanted to ask you about, speaking of personal connections and putting that into the book. So I know you have twin girls. Was your girls being twins an influence at all on Prudence and Jude being twins?
Yes, to some degree. Now that I have twins, they're now 6 years old, I definitely am just more aware of twins. I mean, you see them more in the world and you're just paying more attention. And so I think that that was just at the top of my mind as I was developing this family. It was also a bit of a wish for me because Prudence and her brother Jude are so close and they're mm-hmm. such good friends. And I want that for my girls so badly. And more often than not, when you talk to people who have twins, they will tell you, oh yes, I'm very close to my sibling. There's no other relationship like it. But every once in a while, you hear about twins who get on each other's nerves and don't have that close relationship. And I would just hate to see that. So this mm-hmm. was really me wanting to write a set of twins that have everything that I hope for my own girls as they're, going through their adolescence and their teenage years. So there was that. And then there's also, they have a younger sister, Ellie, who is 4 in the book, and my girls were 4 when I was writing it, and she is very much inspired by them. The weird, wacky things kids say, and their emotions are all over the place, and you mm-hmm. never know if they're, about to laugh hysterically or throw a tantrum, or it's just constant ping-ponging back and forth. So she was so much fun for me to write, to really get to put that side of family life into things too.
It's so true. My boys are 7 and 10, and I just never know what each day is going to bring. Yes. It's, you know, random comments about boy things or body parts, you know, to like all of a sudden throwing a temper tantrum and whining or fighting each other, beating each other. Like, I never know what's going to happen in a day.
I know. And it's back and forth too. And, you know, the girls, they'll be playing great for an hour and just little angels having the best time off in their own world, and it's going so wonderful, and then out of the blue everything falls apart and it's hair pulling and screaming and it's not fair and she did this and she said that, and then 10 minutes later it's all over and they're back to playing. It's just like how can you be all over the place like that?
Mine are the same way. It's crazy. I just I don't know. Oh man, children.
I know, children, the joy.
Oh gosh, I know. All right. Well, let's talk about prudence a little bit. I love prudence. It was also maybe a little bit hard for me to read her because I also definitely could relate to her in some ways. Yeah. And so I was like, yikes, is that what I'm like? Like, I can't, because, oh man.
You are not alone. I have been hearing that from so many readers, and is very much myself too. I'm embarrassed to confess to how much of myself is in Prudence. She's definitely the character of all the characters I've written. She's the one that is most like teen Marissa in a way that's not complimentary.
I feel that.
And so she, at the same time, though, I wanted to write a character that could, she can be a pill, she can be a headache, she has flaws. And at the start of the story, she's not always likable. Like, she really is not a compassionate person in a lot of ways. She's very judgmental, very, kind of controlling. And anyway, she has a lot to work through. But I wanted to write a character like that, that, like I said, was very much like teen Marissa, but also show that people can grow and change and learn. And I think that that's really important to see and to recognize. And her, the path that Prudence goes through and the kind of character arc that she has really spoke to me on a lot of levels as things that I had to learn as I was growing up. So it was good for me to write her as a character, I think. And I've been so happy to hear that I'm not alone and that so other people see themselves in her as well.
Very much so. And I would say teenage Leah, but also some present day Leah, unfortunately. Like, I feel like I can be a complete control freak, and it's really bad. It's really bad.
Me too. Like, I
am just that person, like, because she didn't want to let Quint help with the report because she wanted to, and that is so me. Like, I'll even, like, at home, I'll ask my husband to help me with something, and then I'll go back and be like, that's not how you do it. He's like, do you want me to do it or not? I'm like, I know, I'm sorry. Like, I can't, it's really bad. I'm trying to get better about it and let things go more, but I definitely, and I think too, like, when you're reading a character who's like that, like, it just brings out that realization in you even more, which is fine. But I just,
Yes. No, Prudence definitely is, shining a spotlight on a lot of things. But no, I'm the same way. It is hard to let go. It is hard to trust people, especially with things that you feel like I can do it better, or I can, I don't need you. I don't need your help. I can do it all. But at the same time, we also know logically that life is just better when you have a little bit of help, or when you trust people and delegate and anyway. So yeah, but it's hard. It's not easy to do. I'm with you.
No, it is not. But I did like to, that she is a control freak, but at the same time, she's also really ambitious and she's a go-getter, like, she knows what she wants and she goes after it. I love all of the planning for the event that she does later on in the book. I just think, she did have to let some stuff go there, but, but she was able to also like take control at the same time and come up with this amazing thing, that happens. I don't want to say too many specifics and give too much away, but I do love that character arc that she has too, and how she does learn and change from it, because that does happen. You know, we go through different circumstances and we realize, oh, I need to change that about myself, yeah. Or, you know, things need to be different. And so I love that, because I did feel like it was very realistic, and especially when you're a teenager, there's always so much learning and changing that happens, you know, and yeah. It's good for other teens to read about that and see how that happens, you know?
Yeah, definitely. No, it's interesting. I was just talking to author Robin Lefevers on my podcast, and she was talking about the same thing, where in her newest duology, one of the characters makes a huge, enormous mistake that really changes the course of the book, and then everyone has to scramble to figure out how do we fix this. And she was saying how that was kind of one of the main things that she wanted to tackle in this book, was showing a character, and for her specifically a female character, who makes a mistake, because we make mistakes, and it's okay to see that. It's good for people to see that. It's good for teenage girls to see that.
Yeah.
You make a mistake, and sometimes it's really big and it's really bad, but that doesn't mean your life is over, you know, that you can still move on from that. The mistakes that Prudence make are not as big as the mistakes made in that trilogy. I went on the line. But nevertheless, that speaks to me in a way that I do think it's good for us to see that, you know, we're all human and we're all learning, and people can change and grow. And the important thing is that you're open to that idea, and that you're willing to let yourself change and willing to be wrong sometimes.
Yeah, I agree completely. Another one of Prudence's just wonderful qualities that I also happen to unfortunately sometimes have is just with, you know, how she was very kind of judgmental of Quint at first. But then I will find myself doing it and I'm like, what are you doing? Stop it. Like, you don't know. But see, and I like how she realized she needed to stop being judgmental when she learned about his situation and what was going on. And I really love that in this, because it's a good way to show people, like, it is, we need to give people the benefit of the doubt sometimes. We don't understand everything that people are going through. We're not living at their house. We don't know what the situation is. So you never know what they could be going through. And it's really important to, as hard as it is, and as much as they might make us angry and irritate us, sometimes you just have to kind of try and let go of the judgment and, you know, give them the benefit of the doubt on things, because you just don't know what's happening. So.
Yeah, no, true. It's so true. And that's definitely one of the huge themes that I was wanting to carry through this book, and with Prudence especially. Because I, you know, same, similar, like we, as humans, we have an instinct to cast judgment, to make these split second judgment calls. You know, first impressions carry so much weight with us in what we see and how we interpret someone. And I mean, for me, as I've gotten older and you meet more people, so often you realize that those first impressions were false, and that there's so much more going on under the surface, going on behind the scenes, that you're not aware of. And so it becomes one of those things where you almost have to be very aware of yourself making those decisions, making those judgment calls, and it kind of goes against some of our natural instincts. But I think if we can be aware of that, and it, like you say, give people the benefit of the doubt, be willing to get to know somebody a little bit more before just writing them off. It's an important human skill, and one that, you know, can be really difficult to cultivate, but it really makes a huge difference.
It really does. You know, but sometimes in those moments when we are being judgmental, we do wish that we had her ability to exact instant karma on people. I mean, I think that was like such a fun aspect of this book, because who has not wished that something could, you know, like you get mad and you're like, oh, if only I could just smack you or this, like, you know, something would fall on top of your head, or like somebody, I wanted to just throw a glass of water in her face or whatever. Like, and she gets to do that in a way, you know, like, yep. It's like, that's awesome.
No, it really is. And it was so much fun to write. I just loved this idea because there are, we have all experienced that, whether you know, as you see someone cuts you off in traffic or is, you know, driving erratically, and you think, where is a police officer? Why are they never here when I'm seeing this? And, you know, and, but all the things, someone cutting in line at the, you know, fair or whatever, someone, I mean, people are just annoying sometimes.
Oh yeah. Very true.
Yeah. And so there is, it's a very human, I think, universal feeling, desire to, you know, see people get their comeuppance. It was really fun to work with that.
Oh yeah. I can imagine that would be so much fun. I know that I would enjoy that if it were me, but.
Right. But at the same time, and kind of going back to what we were just saying, you know, I also really wanted to turn it on its head to be like, you know, but how do we know? How do we know that this person is cutting in line and not just meeting up with their grandma or whatever? How
right.
do we know driving erratically because they're rushing to the hospital? Like, you just don't know. So I really wanted to play with that element of giving people the benefit of the doubt. And, you know, this idea that what you see on the surface isn't always the reality.
Yeah, exactly. So the romance aspect of this book, I have to tell you, as I was reading this, and Prudence just, you know, kind of wavers. She's not really sure what's going on and how she's feeling. To me, it reminded me so much of Anne of Green Gables with Anne and Gilbert, because Anne is like, Gilbert is always like, now Quint wasn't this way, but Gilbert is always like, oh, I'm so in love with you, Anne. You know, like they have this like crazy relationship, but she's always so resistant to him, you know? And she's always like, get away from me, Gilbert. And it's not until they are like much, much older, like many years later, that she finally realizes that she's in love with him. So I really love this. I love the like enemies to lovers, like trope. I absolutely love it. It was just so much fun to read and to experience that.
Thank you. No, the enemies to lovers is one of my all-time favorite tropes, and I can't believe that here we are. I don't know, this is like my 12th or 13th book, and this is the first time where I finally read an enemies to lovers story. So yeah, it was again back to just being pure joy with this book.
I mean, I don't know what it is about that trope, but it's just like, I don't know. I think for me, one reason I really enjoy it is because it makes it more difficult, you know, like it's not just, the love's not just super easy. It doesn't just, everything doesn't just fall into place. There's more challenges that kind of come along with it, which is more realistic, which this is like, I sound like I would be like love realistic type stuff, but in all reality, like I read fantasy and dystopian and these types of things. So I don't, that's, you know, it's coming off funny, but
with the enemies to lovers, you're right. It has this built-in tension to it. And what is romance without tension? You know,
right.
That's part of what makes it spark. I also love that with an enemies to lovers, you're inevitably going to have these, you know, reactions toward each other at the beginning, in which, again, they have these judgments of each other. Mm-hmm. They have these ideas of who this person is. And then to watch the characters peel that away over the course of the story and have to come to terms with how wrong they were, and also come to terms with, oh, wait, turns out you actually have good qualities. Turns out there might be things about you that are okay. And oh, wait, it's not just okay. It's actually really charming. And oh gosh, darn it. Now I think I might actually like you. And now what do I do? Like all of those emotions, they're just really fun, you know, as a writer and as a reader to experience.
Yeah, they are really fun. That's another thing that with your Renegade series, that's so great because it's like secret enemies to lovers in a way. Like they don't know that they're enemies.
But not quite.
I know. But it's there enough, you know, like it just, that one has its own elements of problems to go along yeah. with. But.
Yeah, no lack of things keeping them apart in that story.
No. Oh. So with the animal rescue center that's in this, did you do kind of a lot of research on that type of thing and in that world? I would imagine you would need to look up at least some information for that.
Yeah, there was really quite a lot of research, and which for this book, I'd say maybe 80% of my research just went into the animal rescue element. And so I did actually go to Laguna Beach, Florida, and visited a sea animal rescue center down there. This is obviously pre-COVID. And it was so cool. I didn't like give them any heads up. We just, it's open to the public. So we, my husband and I just went and checked it out and, you know, we're seeing the sea animals and, they had all sea lions and seals there and, you know, reading all of the messaging that they have posted and the educational stuff. And a docent came up to talk to us and was like, do you have any questions? And of course I'd come literally with a notebook full of questions. Like, oh boy, do I ever. And, you know, told them I'm a writer and I'm working on a book that's going to be largely set in a similar facility. And the volunteers were so great and so helpful. And I talked to one volunteer for maybe like 2 hours. And she just told me so many different stories, real life stories about different animals that they had rescued and how they found them and what had been wrong with them and, you know, different ways that they'd cared for them. And I mean, it was just so informative. And so really a lot of, in fact, maybe all of the stories of different animals that you hear about in the book are inspired by real life animals that had been in this center. So that was really cool. And then they even gave me a, like a behind the scenes tour that most people didn't go on. So I got to see some of the medical rooms and it was just so cool. I felt very VIP, very special. and so that was huge for really helping me to design and figure out what the center was going to be like. And then even after that, you know, then, so of course I went home and I wrote the book and then would have additional questions. And there was a wonderful employee down at the Pacific Marine Mammal Center who I was able to email back and forth so I could ask really random things and being like, okay, so when you're making fish smoothies, is that like mostly mackerel or like, what do you put in that? And, or like, just like pretend for a second that there was a huge storm one night. What would you have to do to protect the animals? Like,
oh my gosh,
various questions. And she was such a great sport and gave me such detailed answers that really went a long way toward helping me make it as authentic and realistic as I could. So yeah, that was pretty much all of the research. And it was so much fun though. And so interesting. Yeah.
I absolutely love marine life and marine animals. Okay, so little known fact, I actually used to want to be a marine biologist.
One of my daughters wants to be a marine biologist.
Yeah, it was funny because, when I was like in middle school, that was all I wanted to be, was a marine biologist because I just love them. And then one day I thought, well, I didn't have enough information, you know, like I wasn't at that point. And I just thought to myself, well, how would I get paid? Who would hire me? Would I have to go out and do research by myself? Like, how does this work? I don't know. I ended up talking myself out of it and into majoring in theater in college, which, hello, no jobs. So, I mean, I'm not really sure what I was thinking, but it's fine. I mean, it worked out fine, but I,
right there.
Oh my gosh. But I do love, for me, it was another like awesome aspect of the book. Especially the moment where, Prudence and Quint go snorkeling with the sea turtle. I love sea turtles so much. I have had the privilege of being able to see a nest of sea turtles hatch in person. It was so amazing. So this was a huge like connecting point for me, at least with your book, you know, and I loved that aspect of it. I thought it was a really fun environment for it to be in.
That's cool. No, that's wonderful to hear. The snorkeling scene was very much inspired by my own real experience going snorkeling for the first time, which for me was in Hawaii when I was, how old was I? Maybe like 13 or 14 years old. Snorkeling out in one of the bays and looked down and there was a huge sea turtle underneath me. And I completely freaked me out because they're big animals. You know, yeah, you don't know.
They're huge. They are.
And it was right there. And yeah. And I probably just floated there and watched that sea turtle for, I don't know, 15 or 20 minutes before he just swam away, but it was just magical.
Yeah, it really is. I like sea life creature moments like that for me are so amazing and magical as well. I love it.
Yes. Yes. That's one of the things about the water and the ocean is that you just, there's so much under there. And it's when it's out of sight, it's out of mind. Like we don't always think about it, but it's just so full of life and really cool creatures.
It is. Sometimes though, a little scary, you know, like
oh,
if you're,
terrifying.
I mean, out in the ocean
world, yes.
definitely have had the experience of, cause we live in South Carolina. We're not very far from Charleston. So we go to the beach quite frequently. Definitely had some moments this summer with jellyfish encounters, like very, very close to them. Thankfully, nobody got stung, but they're right there in the water right next to us.
Yeah.
You know, something, feeling something swimming against my leg. I still don't know what it was. I don't want to know, but it's fine, you know. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, one of my daughters wants to be a marine biologist. They're only six. So, you know, we'll see.
Right. Who knows?
It's been a thing now since she was maybe two or three. So far going strong. And she actually just asked me this morning if when she's a little bit older, I'll go scuba diving out in the Puget Sound, which is the big body of water next to Tacoma here. And because she wants to go down and see the giant octopus that supposedly lives in this Puget Sound. And I was like, that sounds awful and cold and terrifying. Let's address that when you get a little bit older.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. All right. I'm going to switch gears here for a little bit. I have a few questions from some of my listeners that I thought I would ask. So Taylor would like to know, this is a fun question. If you could turn Renegades into a fairy tale adaptation, what would it be?
Like which fairy tale would I be adapting?
Yes.
Oh boy. If Renegades was a fairy tale adaptation. Okay. The first, well,
it's a tough one.
I don't know how this would work without actually sitting and, you know, giving it more thought. But the first one that came to my mind was East of the Sun, West of the Moon, which has, it's a little bit like a Norwegian Beauty and the Beast.
Okay.
A little bit. And so I think that the hero and villain thing could work out.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of different characters as far as like the winds and, you know, the four winds and her family. And anyway, I feel like it might work, but honestly, without sitting and actually thinking about it, I don't know how I could get it to work, but it is the first one that popped into my mind.
It's a tricky question.
Yeah.
We do have a couple of writing related questions. So just two more. Josie was wanting to know, what is the key to writing relatable characters and believable words?
Believable words as in like dialogue?
Yes.
Oh, well, good question. I think we're all always asking ourselves that exact same thing. For me, a lot of characters tend to start out really boring and really flat and really uninteresting and not real and not believable and not human. And I usually suffer through an entire first draft that way, feeling like I have no idea who these people are or what they want, or you know, their dialogue is completely boring and we're just moving the story along at that point. And then, but then by the time I get to the end of the first draft, usually some surprises have cropped up and you're writing along and a character says something that you didn't expect, or they reveal this thing about their past, or they reveal this, you know, hobby of theirs that you didn't know about, or various things. They just kind of start to pop up as you're going along and you think, oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that about you. And so you file it away. And in the second and the third drafts is when I really start thinking more about that sort of thing and asking myself, okay, now, who is this person really? Mm-hmm. What is their backstory like? How did they grow up? You know, what is their family like? What are some challenges that they've had? And what is it that they're wanting? What's motivating them to stick around in this story? And what are their dreams for the future? And what are some interesting quirks, some hobbies, the way that they look at the world? I mean, all of these things, they just kind of start to bubble to the surface. And again, it doesn't happen early on for me. Some characters, it might take multiple drafts to get to that point where the characters are really starting to speak to me. But it always happens. Eventually, there reaches a point where it's not just me typing into my computer and kind of pushing the characters along. Instead, it gets to a point where the characters are really starting to speak and starting to take control. And that's when I know that, okay, they've come to life. I'm not thinking of them as my own creation. Now mm-hmm. they're feeling like, you know, someone who has a soul and who has their own personality. And if they start to feel that way for me, then I just have to hope that they're going to come across the page to the readers in the same way.
Yeah. I love hearing about authors' writing processes. It's always very fascinating to me. And, you know, because I'll read a book like this and I'm like, I don't know how, like my brain just doesn't function like this. Like, yeah. I like to think of myself as a very creative person. I am involved in theater and I do some writing, but it's more like I'm a blogger and blog editor. So it's a different type of writing and it's short. It's very short.
Yeah, right.
I'm always just like, wow, that is impressive how you can write it this long, all this detail, and make all these characters come to life and have all this amazing, believable dialogue too. Like, I always enjoy hearing how that process works.
Thank you. Well, I'm obviously very glad to hear that people like the characters and connect mm-hmm. to the characters. That's the goal. You know, that's what we're trying to accomplish. But I also think that, you know, as a reader, you have to keep in mind that you are reading the finished product. And, you know, even I will fall into this trap where I will read a book and just be blown away by the characters and the dialogue. And I'll think, oh my gosh, this writer is a genius and they're so talented. And I will forget that, you know, this is probably like the eighth draft. And they probably, it wasn't this great in the first draft. They had to work through it. They had to figure it out. And so if for the writers listening to this, like, know that it's not going to be great and it's not going to be perfect the first time through, but it can be made better as you go.
And so kind of along with that too, my last listener question for you, this is from Caitlin, and she wants to know how you battle writer's block if you get stuck somewhere in that process.
Yeah. So writer's block is a tricky thing. I will say, just in general, I know I have confidence in myself that if I need to get words done and I sit down at my computer, I can make words happen. Like, I just know that I can, no matter how bad it is, no matter how bad things are going, I know I'm always capable of writing something. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important to keep in mind, because I think you can fall into this trap of thinking, oh, I'm really stuck. I have writer's block. It's not working. And then it's almost like you're telling yourself that you're not capable of writing. It's almost like you're giving yourself permission not to try, just to give up. And that's not good. That's not what you want. Yeah. You're trying to work out of it. And so I think number one, just know that you can always sit down and write something, even if it's terrible, even if it's not going to make it into the final book. Like, you're capable of creating words and putting words on a page. So number one, just like, don't think about writer's block as something that's permanent and, you know, mm-hmm. unavoidable. That said, there are definitely times when you don't feel like it, or there's anxiety or stress, you know, especially here in 2020, mm-hmm. you know, other factors at play. Sometimes we're just creatively drained, or we're, you know, need to take a nap, or we need to focus on something different, or whatever it is, like, you will go through those periods, and that's okay. Like, I think it's important to take care of ourselves and to take care of our creative well-being. And if you need to take off a day or a week or a month to let yourself recover, do it. Like, don't feel like you have to force yourself to create if you're really in a place where what you really need to be doing is refilling the creative well. So that's one thing I say, like, don't force it. If you need to take time off, then take time off. It's okay. On the other hand, if that's not the case, if you're not facing burnout and you just, like, you know, are feeling kind of lazy today, or you're just procrastinating or whatever it is, then there are strategies. Like, I love the timer method, where I bring it down to a really small amount of time. For me, it's usually like 10 or 15 minutes. And I set a timer and say, I'm not going to stop writing until the timer goes off. And for me, there's something about having that ticking clock and knowing it's only for 10 minutes. It's only for 15 minutes. Like, you can do it, right? It's only 10 minutes. Something about knowing that gets me going. And usually once I'm going, then we're good. It's about getting started. So yeah, so that's one of my top strategies for those days when I'm just like, ugh, writing. Fine.
I love that. That's what you said too about the timer method, because that's how prudence is at the beginning of, you know, like, it's just 5 minutes. I can get through this speech. I just have to get started.
Exactly. Yeah. Again, so much me and prudence.
Oh man. Okay. So I was at the Crowdcast event for your virtual tour, and so I heard the announcement of your next book, which sounds very exciting, but I'm going to let you tell my listeners about it if you would like.
Sure. Yes. So it's weird because it's one of those things where it's still in a very, very early part of the process. And so I'm kind of like, I am so not ready to be telling anything about this book because it's all going to change. But nevertheless, I can say that I am working on another fairy tale retelling that will be out next November. And it is a retelling of Rumpelstiltskin, which is one of my favorite fairy tales. And one that I just really wanted to tackle because I feel like there are so many flaws in the original story and things that I want better answers to. Mm-hmm. And so therefore I am coming up with my own answers. And of course there will be romance and there will be magic and beyond that, who knows? It's all up in the air.
Hey, that's great. I have always loved Rumpelstiltskin as well, and I've always been very fascinated with it for so many reasons. But yeah, it definitely brings up a lot of questions. Lot of questions.
It really does.
You know, like, there's just so many elements of it that you're like, something's not right there. This is weird. You know?
Yes,
so exactly. I think that'll be a lot of fun. I know Instagram chats I've been in, people who heard the announcement already are all very excited and we're talking positively about it because they love Rumpelstiltskin as well. And so I know it's going to be great. Lots of people are looking forward to it already.
Good. I am happy to hear that. And it's fun to be going back to fairy tales. It's been a while.
Yeah, that'll be good. Well, I just want to say thank you so much for being here today. It's been so awesome having you. And for everybody listening, I'm going to put links to all of Marissa's books, her website, her Instagram, and her podcast as well. She has a fantastic podcast that you guys should listen to. And so I'll put links to all of that in the show notes for today. And yeah, thank you so much for being here and for chatting with me.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Of course. And thank you everybody for listening, and we will chat again soon.
Thank you so much to my special guest, Marissa Meyer, for being a part of the podcast today. Be sure to follow YA Book Chat on Instagram and Facebook, and don't forget to subscribe so you get your episodes as soon as they are available. Please be sure to check out YA Book Chat's brand new Patreon account. There are many benefits that you will not want to miss out on. YA Book Chat was created, is hosted, and edited by me, Leah Stuhler.